County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100 ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month for free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left for tonight's special episode of TCCP is none other than hard-hitting Derbyshire batsman Tom Wood. So Tom, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how has your day been so far?
Thanks very much, mate. Privileged to be here. Day's been pretty good, actually. Quite busy. Had training this morning. So just had a bat this morning and then a gym session. And then I actually got a phone call from a brother who's not very well at the minute, not COVID though, asking me to pick my nephew up from school and look after him for the afternoon. So I've had my hands full with uncle duties and obviously rushed back just to get back in time for the pod.
Well, first and foremost, Tom, wishing your brother a quick recovery, hopefully gets well soon. And secondly, a very busy day then, it has to be said, with the training going back, obviously getting into the flow again. Now that the county summer, it's not that far away, is it? Now that we're in January.
No, not at all. That's often the case with pre-season. Once you go back in the new year, the season soon comes around very, very quickly.
It does, yeah. And fingers crossed this week. We are recording this, listeners, on the 17th of January. Fingers crossed. The fixtures finally get released this week. I cannot wait. Honestly, I've been waiting so long. You know, we all like to plan our summers, don't we? In England and Wales. And yeah, maybe this week is finally the week our prayers have been answered by the England and Wales Cricket Board. But before we get into tonight's conversation, Tom, I suppose we have to talk about a little bit of an ashes-sized elephant in the room, don't we? Because for those who have been living under a rock for the past month or so, England lost the Ashes 4-0. To say the word convincing is probably a bit of an understatement. It was an emphatic 4-0 drubbing at the hands of Pat Cummins and the Australians. Tom, I have to ask, what did you make of this year's Ashes in terms of, you know, England's performances? Obviously, the fallout as well, which has been massive. Everyone's got their own opinion. What would you have to say about this year's Ashes performance from the Three Lions?
Yeah, it's obviously not been a great tour for the boys. But I think if everybody's honest heading into the tour, I don't think a lot of people had high expectations. I'm not sure people saw it going quite as emphatically as it has. I think a lot of people expected England to have a tough tour.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a fun prediction on the podcast with a certain Jake Linsock from Warwickshire. He said 5-0 Australia. I said 3-2 England. So Jake, in the end, yeah, well done, mate. You were a lot closer on that compared to me. I just wanted, you know, I just wanted that grain of optimism. And after the Gabba, it was jettisoned. It was jettisoned far outside of Warwickshire. So yeah, not a great series for England at all. And we'll discuss the fallout of that on an upcoming podcast. Myself, Joan Lucy, we'll go through that in a lot more detail because tonight's not really the pod. Okay, we don't really want to be doing the post-mortem of England. We want a nice time on the podcast tonight, don't we, Tom, instead of, you know, complaining and and moaning about the Three Lions performances down under. And in fact, Tom, just to give you a quick taster of what you can expect tonight, basically, it's just your cricketing journey. And the best place to start any journey is, of course, with the origin, the start of any good story. So what are your first ever memories of cricket, Tom, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
Well, it's hard to say my first ever memories because I've literally been brought up playing cricket ever since I was a baby, ever since I could stand up, ever since I could hold a bat. My dad's a cricket enthusiast. As I said earlier, I've got an older brother. So my childhood was pretty much engulfed in playing cricket in the back garden, playing cricket in the house, breaking all of mum's ornaments in the house, ruining the garden on the patio, spending weekends down at the cricket club when I was a kid, watching my dad. And then it's just spiraled on from there, getting involved, playing. And yeah, it's all gone from there, really.
It most certainly has. It's funny, isn't it? You know, how life works out from those early formative years and now in the county circuit. That is absolutely fantastic. And in terms of your local club, because we like to shout out the local clubs here on the County Cricket Podcast, Tom, what is your local club in your area?
So my local club is where I first started, called Stainsby Hall Cricket Club. My dad's the chairman. It's a really family affiliation with the club. My granddad used to be the president. My uncle played there, was first 11 captain. My brother played there, was first 11 captain. I played there, was first 11 captain. So yeah, Stainsby Hall's my home club. It's literally just 2 minutes up the road. And then about 7 or 8 years ago, I left to move to Ticknor to play in the Premier League when my cricket started to get a little bit more serious.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot on Twitter with regards to a certain nickname, Ticknor's Finest. We do get that quite often from the Derbyshire faithful on our Twitter accounts. It is absolutely fantastic. Always, always brings out a smile on my face when we see that in the comments section. It's brilliant. But yeah, shout out to, what was it, Stainsby Hall?
Stainsby Hall Cricket Club, yeah.
And Ticknor as well. We'll shout out both of them. You know, both excellent local clubs in and around Derbyshire. And Tom, I did pick up a bit of a pattern there. So very much a family influence in those early days with your dad, Absolutely. Your brother, granddad as well. Such a fantastic way to get into the game, I must admit. But aside from the family influences, who in the world of professional cricket did you kind of idolise and look up to in those formative years? Did you have any, you know, particular role models in the game itself that you tried to emulate and formulate your game off of, per se?
In terms of cricketing heroes when I was growing up, it's obviously Andrew Flintoff and also Kevin Peterson as well. I think I was always obviously into cricket as a kid, but in terms of like watching it and actually understanding what's happening was around about the 05 Ashes. And I think that's a very common trait for a lot of cricketers my age, because that series just encaptured not just myself, but pretty much the whole nation. And yeah, Andrew Flintoff, he can't really have much of a better cricketing hero than him after what he did in the 05 Ashes, and also Kevin Peterson as well. So they're the two cricketing heroes as a youngster, for sure.
Two excellent choices, it has to be said. And it comes up pretty much every single time here on the podcast. We might as well call ourselves the 2005 Ashes podcast, because it comes up without fail, basically every single interview podcast with the current players. It is an iconic series. It's a revered series, and rightfully so. So many fantastic individual performances, memorable games. Tom, in your opinion, if you could go back right to 2005 and relive one of those games, which one would you choose and why?
I think the moment I would relive is Harmison getting Kasparovic out off when they only needed like two runs to win. That was just, I can remember sitting watching it. It's just absolutely unbelievable. Like the emotion, the ecstasy, even the commentary was unbelievable. And for England to get that wicket and see the celebrations, I can still picture Michael Vaughan running around, both fists clenched, pumping his arms, jumping on top of Flintoff. It was just unbelievable moment and something that will always stick with me for a long, long, long time.
And as it should. What a test match that was at the Fortress, also known as Edgbaston Cricket Ground, here in the West Midlands. What a test match that was. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's the closest ever victory in an Ashes series. Considering that we've been playing in the Ashes since 1882, that says a lot about that particular result. And it was absolutely crazy. Do you remember what you were doing on the day?
Not specifically, no. I just remember being sat on the sofa just watching it. I think my dad and my brother were there as well, as usual. And yeah, to watch that and experience that was very, very special.
You see, I can't say that. This is the thing. I love talking about the 05 Ashes because it's an iconic series. But at the same time, I got into cricket in 2008. So for me, it's not like I can relate. I can't say, oh, I was sat at home with my family watching the 2005 Ashes. I wasn't into cricket back then. And it's such a shame. In hindsight, I wish I was. I really do. Although I must say, my first ever Ashes series, 2009, the first game of that series, Sophia Gardens, The Great Escape. God.
Monty and Adam Anderson.
Yes.
Unbelievable, yeah. What an introduction to cricket.
I know, yeah. That's probably why I love Test cricket now, because at the time, I was, you know, getting into it, I was trying to understand it. And the way in which, I mean, everyone just reacted, I was like, hang on, they've just drawn this game. They're acting like we've just won. But then you realise these two cannot bat and they have just survived for an hour in so much pressure in an Ashes series. And that, I think, has really kickstarted my love for the game. So big up to Monty Panesar, big up to Jimmy as well, England's greatest ever seen bowler. And again, that was a pretty good series. Freddie Flintoff's final Ashes series, unfortunately, but he bowed out in good fashion, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah, that was a very special series as well. Watching the boys win that one. As you said, it started under a lot of pressure and intensity at Cardiff, and it just got better and better.
It most certainly did. It's just a shame, isn't it? 2021/22, we're not having the same discussions, but you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles, isn't it? Sport's cyclical. Some teams are better than others, and yeah, we're just going to have to lick our proverbial wounds and move on, aren't we, with regards to cricket in this country.
Yeah, it's always a tough tour to go to Australia, and it's not very often teams go there in general, let alone England going there and winning the Ashes. So yeah, it's nothing new, unfortunately.
It is a shame though, isn't it? Because I think back to 2010-11, what a series that was. I know the sprinkler divides opinion, Tom. What's your opinion on the sprinkler? Were you for it or not your thing?
I think when you win the Ashes, you can do whatever you want. So I'm all for it, yeah. And I'm sure the Aussies hated it as well, which makes me love it even more.
If Derbyshire get promoted this season, will the boys bring out the sprinkler?
Well, I'll definitely be doing it, that's for sure. Amongst a lot of other things as well, if we get promoted this year. 100%.
I look forward to that. Fingers crossed that happens. That'll be absolutely fantastic. It'll give us some great content as well on the Twitter account. Let's just say that. And I think that is a perfect place, actually, to pick up our conversation about Derbyshire, your boyhood club, Tom, because it is one of the 18 first-class counties. I think it's existed, if I'm not mistaken, since 1870. It's also one of the oldest. They've been playing first-class cricket. I know they made their first-class debut in 1871 against Lancs. So lots of history, lots of pedigree, lots of tradition. What were your first ever memories surrounding Derbyshire in terms of maybe playing or watching, maybe going to the ground? What were your first kind of experiences with the club itself?
I think my first experiences would probably have been going to the ground with my dad to watch some games, closely followed by under 10s trials. So I think them two were very closely interlinked. But yeah, I've got lots of memories of going down to the ground with my dad and my brother, watching games. And as I said, I've been involved with the club ever since I was 10 years old, all the way through the age group. So plenty of memories there for sure.
Absolutely. And again, it's a nice pathway into the game. I've always said this on the podcast, when it's your boyhood club, it just means a bit more because it's your local one. It's the one that you've grown up supporting. It's the one that you're most passionate about. It's always fantastic. We love to see it here on the podcast. We really do. And after all of those years, I suppose, in age group cricket, in the academy system as well, we moved to 2016, Tom, which was, of course, your debut. What can you remember from your Derbyshire County Cricket Club debut against Sri Lanka A in that tour match? What can you tell us about the emotions, the experience? What can you recall from that fateful day?
Not a great deal, to be honest. I remember turning up to the ground, and it was just so surreal, a very surreal experience. Turning up to the ground, I think there was a little bit of a rain delay as well, which didn't help, like the nerves sitting around waiting. And then we almost got started pretty quick, so there wasn't much time to prepare or be that nervous. And I think we batted first, and it was a rain-reduced game to about 40 over game. And I remember batting at 5, and I just remember walking out. And Ben Slater was batting at the time, someone I've known for a very long time because he was like a family friend, and he played in my brother's county age group. So I knew him, knew the family. And to walk out with Benny out there was class. And like, he calmed me down, and I remember first ball, I don't remember the name of the bowler, left arm leg spinner.
Sandakan.
That's him, yeah. He played, and first ball, he's bowled one full and wide, and I cover drove it for four. And I was walked down to slats, and I was like, easy game, this. Oh, little did I know, it's not an easy game at all. But yeah, it got off to a pretty decent start. I managed to get 44, I think, in that game. Slats got 100. And then, to be honest, the Sri Lankans came out and just, it was a rude awakening, actually, because we thought we had a chance. I think we got about 270 in 40 overs, which half time we was like, yeah, lads, we've got a good chance here. We'll beat this Sri Lanka A side. We've got a ride chance. And then they just came out and absolutely murdered it. I think they knocked it off in about 25 overs. And that was a real eye-opener and showed that there's levels to this professional cricket thing.
There most certainly are. There are a 7-wicket loss to Sri Lanka A. But then again, you know, it's one step below international. You expect them to be an excellent team. You really do. And I'll tell you what, good recall as well, Tom. 44 from 41 balls. And you were dismissed by Lakshan Sandakan. So
I was. Yeah. I tried to hit him for six to go for 50. There was only a few overs left. Always remember the good knocks. And obviously, with it being my debut as well, I'll always remember it forever. I can talk you through ball by ball if you want, but it's probably the pod's not long enough. But yeah, I saw my name up in lights, debut, leg spinner on, ran down, tried to whack him for six and held out on the rope. But no, I was pretty happy with the start for sure.
I don't blame you for that at all, you know, showing the positive intent. Although I am a spinner myself, so maybe I wouldn't quite appreciate that if I was the one bowling. I don't think Lakshan would have appreciated it either. But you know what, Tom? If we do a part two, we'll go through ball by ball. That's what we'll do. We'll test your recall. I'll get quick info up.
I'm sure all the fans would be desperate to hear that.
Be our most listened podcast, I reckon, so far from the Derbyshire Faithful. But also in 2016, Tom, I wanted to touch upon another aspect of that season, and that was the second 11 championship, because you really excelled in that tournament in that year. If I just look at your stats, 312 runs at an average of 104, including a 200 not out from 330 balls against Worcestershire, which gives you extra brownie points from this particular Warwickshire fan. In terms of the step up from second 11 cricket to first 11 cricket, how did you find that personally? Was that a difficult transition for you?
Absolutely, yeah. The step up from second 11 cricket to first 11 cricket is massive. It's not only just the quality and the skill level goes up, but the intensity goes up as well. And that's something when you go from playing club cricket to second 11 cricket, there's that step up again. And then that step up from the second team to the first team, the intensity goes up a notch, and all of a sudden you've got a lot of eyes on you. And it's very, very different to playing second team cricket for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, we get that all the time on the podcast. It's a massive step up. It's like with anything in cricket though, isn't it? From academy to second 11, second 11 to first 11, first 11 to A cricket or Lions cricket, as it is in this country, and then Lions cricket to test match cricket. That's the biggest jump of all. It's a massive, massive jump. I don't think anything can quite prepare you for the challenges associated with test cricket or indeed any of the international formats. It is a completely different beast. It's so cutthroat. It really is. It's a tough environment, international cricket. And that's why I respect cricketers who, you know, have been in there for years. You look at Joe Root, for example, Ben Stokes, Jimmy Anderson's been there since 2003. We're almost, if he goes on till next year, that's 20 years in and around the England setup. That's crazy, isn't it?
Absolutely mental, yeah. To be able to sustain that level of high performance under so much scrutiny and pressure for 20 years is absolutely incredible. And I don't think a lot of people can ever really understand exactly how difficult that would be.
100%. Yeah, we can't. Us mere mortals. I mean, how he defines the aging process as well. Jimmy's 40 years old. He's 40 years old. How does he do it? Literally, I don't get how he runs in time and time and time again. He's done it for all these years, and yet he's still one of the best bowlers on the planet. He's got better with age. His bowling averages are going down year by year. Like, he's completely defying what we expect from cricketers as they get older. It's absolutely staggering. So fingers crossed, Jimmy can have a good 2022. Who knows? We could see that 20-year anniversary of his test debut in 2023. But getting back on track then, Tom, I just want to talk a little bit more about 2016 and in particular 2017, because that was your first stint of two, the second one being your current stint with the club. But in terms of that first stint, in hindsight, how would you describe your time at the club in that phase?
It was definitely an interesting time. Obviously, you mentioned the second 11 performances in 2016. I struggled to reach the heights of that for whatever reason. I had a few injury issues in that season as well. I remember John Wright came in as the T20 coach because Kim Barnett was director of cricket. And he brought John Wright in as T20 coach. And he told me I was going to open the batting in the T20 stuff. And that was like my big opportunity for the year. And I remember we was playing a T20 second 11 game about 3 days before the first T20 away at Northampton. And I ended up tearing an ab batting. And I was injured for 4 or 5 weeks out of that. And then that year, obviously, the lads did really, really well, got to the quarterfinal of the T20 tournament. And there wasn't really much opportunity to get back in the team. So that was obviously a bit of a blow. There wasn't really many opportunities knocking around at that time with the squad that we had.
Absolutely. It's the hardest part of the game, isn't it? Injuries. You never want to see them. At the moment, you look at the extensive injury list England have got. Imagine if we would have had Jofra, Ollie Stone, for example, in the Ashes. It is harsh. It really is. And it's such a shame, isn't it? Because that opportunity, you've worked so, so hard for it. And then something out of your control takes it away. After all of that sacrifice, the proverbial blood, sweat and tears, always an immensely, immensely difficult thing to overcome. And actually, Tom, before we talk about the release and the redemption story, the story coming back to Derbyshire, how do you deal through injuries? How do you overcome those setbacks? Do you have any kind of, you know, mental techniques, anything outside of the game which you draw upon to overcome that disappointment per se?
Well, I'm quite fortunate, to be honest, whereas apart from that, it was only like a 4 or 5 week injury. I've touched wood. I've been very, very lucky with injuries. I might have the odd little niggle here and there where I'll be out, miss a game or something, but I've never really had any long-term injuries, so it's difficult for me to say. But I think the support of the lads, being around the lads as much as possible, is such an important thing for anyone who's on the long-term injury list, and trying to keep morale up, because it is a tough time mentally when you're sitting on the sidelines, you're not involved, you can't join in with the training, you're almost missing out on a lot of the chat and the banter and stuff with the lads, and obviously not being out there playing is obviously horrific no matter what. So it's just tough. You just got to do as much rehab as you can, always bear in mind of why you're doing it, because it can be quite tedious, and just try and stay as positive as possible. I know it's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason, because it actually works.
100%. That is some very, very sound advice to any young cricketers out there, and in particular the point about the rehabilitation process, because you see with young cricketers sometimes, because of their eagerness to get back into the game, they rush it. They don't do it properly, and it leads to long-term problems later down the line. So if you do get injured, it is frustrating. Of course it is. It's disappointing. You want to be out there. You want to be playing. We all do as cricketers. But just heed your doctor's advice. You know, rehab it properly. Go through all of the steps. Build up slowly, I'd say, when it comes to that return. And yeah, you'll be back out there in no time, and fingers crossed, performing as you did beforehand as well, which is always important. But Tom, I suppose we have to go on to one of the tougher moments from your county career to date, and that would be 2017, and the moment when your contract at Derbyshire was terminated. So in terms of that initial reaction to that, what was going through your head? Because you've worked so hard, we've mentioned the connection from under-10s, academy cricket, second 11 cricket, making your debut just the year before. How did you react to that news in the moment, and I suppose the days that followed?
To be honest, probably not very well. It's obviously, anyone who's experienced it will be able to vouch for the fact that it is one of the most horrific experiences you can go through, when it's something that it's not just like losing a normal job where you can go and get another job, when it's something that you've literally it's been your whole life ever since you was a kid, you've dedicated your whole life to, you sacrificed so much. Like just as one example, when I was 16, 17, 18, my Friday nights when all my mates were going out, just like drinking or going out, doing whatever, my Friday nights were spent at the cricket club with my dad throwing balls at me for 2 hours every week, Thursday, Friday night, pretty much every single week of the season. And people don't really see that. And I remember like you're walking into a room, you sit down, they tell you you're not going to be offered another contract, and your heart just sinks into your stomach. And it is one of the most awful experiences, and I don't wish it on anyone because it is absolutely horrific. And I remember driving home, I was almost in shock. It's just a horrible experience. I didn't really know what to do or where to go from there, really, because it almost feels like at the time, like the world's going to end. But I was quite lucky. I ended up going to Australia and playing for a season out there, which was one of the best things I've ever done. And that was massive, not only for myself at that difficult time, but also for my cricket as well. To be able to go out there and play out there as the overseas and experience different conditions and keep working on your game, keep trying to get as fit as possible and improve every aspect as much as possible, was massive for me. And I think I'd have really struggled if I wouldn't have done that.
100%. Yeah. And to be honest, in hindsight, definitely vital and very valuable that you did do that at the time, because it set you up, I suppose, on the journey back to county cricket. And you mentioned there about it is the toughest thing that you can experience in cricket. This is a staggering stat, and I read this last year. On average, if you take into consideration short-term contracts, 1-2 year contracts, the average county career lasts between 2 and 3 years, which is incredibly short. When you compare that to even football or rugby, and you certainly compare it to what we call a regular job, I suppose, it's a tremendously short amount of time, considering all the sacrifice. And that's something that we as fans, commentators, pundits, we simply don't see. No one would have understood that journey. No one would have known about the sacrifice, the proverbial blood, sweat, tears that has gone into that moment. And just like that, in an instant, it's gone. It must be incredibly, incredibly tough to deal with. And it's a very, very common theme on the podcast. And for some players, it is that bad that they don't go back, because they just cannot deal with it. You know, you've put in all that, those hard yards, you've put in all that time, you've sacrificed so much for that moment, and it's gone. It must be absolutely soul-destroying. And this actually brings me nicely onto a question from Chris, aka Falcons Dub on Twitter. And he asked, when you were released from the club, Tom, did you always think you'd be back at the club? Or did you think that you're going to be at another club aside from Derbyshire? Was the heart always set on Derbyshire, even though they'd, you know, terminate your contract? Or did you, you know, look at other teams, look at other options during those times?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was necessarily my heart was set on Derbyshire. My heart was set on being a professional cricketer, 100%. As I say, I went away to Australia and I worked incredibly hard while I was there, not only on my cricket, but on my fitness as well. Just trying to be and improve as much as I possibly can. So when I came back from Australia, I was a much, much better player. And I came back with the thought process of I'm going to trial, because I have self-belief that like I'm good enough to be a professional cricketer. And it's just about like proving that, really. I remember I got back from Australia. I did really well out there playing grade cricket, which is a very, very good standard of cricket. I actually played at Scott Boland's club and he was the captain. He's just absolutely torn it up in the Ashes as well. So I played there, learned so much, improved so much, and came back and was determined to have another crack at it. And I got back and I remember Mal Loy, I bumped into him in the gym actually, next to the ground, and I had a coffee with him and he said, like, I want you to come back and play in the second team. And at first I was almost a bit like, not sure. I had a chance to go to Leicester and play a few games in their second team, and that almost fell through. So I thought, yeah, why not? I spoke to Kim, who obviously was in charge at the time, and he was on board with me playing in the second team. Basically, he said, if you get a load of runs, like, you never know what happens. So I think that's such an important thing. Like, as you said, it's such a horrific thing being released, and a lot of people can go the opposite way that I did and almost pack it in and give up. But I think anybody who knows me at all knows that I don't give up on anything. And I always think that if you're someone who never gives up, you can't fail, because the only way you fail is when you stop. If you stop trying and you give up, that's when you fail. If you keep trying and you're relentless, try again, trying to improve, learning as much as possible, you keep trying and keep trying, you're almost impossible to stop, because you're always improving, you're always getting better, you're always giving yourself a chance. If you're just relentless with that, that person is very, very difficult to stop.
100%, Tom. Absolutely. And to be honest, I could not have put that any better. This is exactly why I wanted you on the Counts Cricket podcast, because you've experienced all of that. And the way in which you bounce back, to be honest, for a lot of cricketers, is incredibly inspirational. Because you can't hold anything against those cricketers who do experience that and go out of the game. Absolutely not, because we've already gone through it all the time, the amount of sacrifice that they've gone through. I suppose they no longer think it's worth it. But the fact that you got released in 2017, we're now sat here in 2022, you're back in county cricket, you're playing for your boyhood club again. It is a tremendous, tremendous story. That's the only way that I can describe it. It's a really inspirational one and a very motivational one as well. And I love the way in which you spoke about that so passionately there. And that brings me nicely onto a rather profound question on tonight's podcast, Tom. What drives you? What motivates Tom Woods? What motivated you during those dark days, the days where you thought your county career is over? What was the driver behind bringing Tom Wood back into the county circuit?
I think the drive was really just, it's always been my dream to play professional cricket. As we spoke about, I've been involved with the club ever since I was 10. I remember going down and watching games at the ground and just being in awe of the players. And I've always, like, I've sacrificed so much. I've put so much into it. And I, like, my mindset of it is, I've not done all that just to come this far. Like, I know I've got more in the tank. I know I can give more. The last thing that I want to do is look back in 10, 20, 30 years and say, what if? What if I'd have given it another go? What if I tried a little bit harder? What if? That's the worst position I think anybody can possibly be in. I think if you've got a dream and you're determined to do it and you actually really want to do it, I think a lot of people, they have these dreams and they want to do it. But when it comes to actually doing the work and doing what is required to chase that dream and achieve it, that's when a lot of people drop off. So, yeah, it's always been my dream. I'm very lucky as well. I've got two incredibly amazing and supportive parents who have always drilled into me the importance of hard work and perseverance and chasing your dream. I remember a conversation I had with my dad, and he said, we had the conversation like, am I going to give it another go? Am I going to go into the real world, try and get another job? And he said something to me which has always stuck with me. He says, there's a long time to go and get a proper job. While you can, it's a short career, chase that dream as long as you can. And that's something that's always stuck with me and has ultimately been a driving force behind that, because you mentioned there, I went back in 2018 and trialed, but I didn't get offered a contract at the end of that year. I played the whole year in the second team, didn't get offered a contract. Went away to Australia again, played out there 2018, 2019. And then Dave Houghton came in and he wanted to have a look at me, because I did pretty well the year before in the second team. But for whatever reason, I didn't get an opportunity. And then Houts came in 2019 and said, like, we want to have a look at you. And I think I got 300s before June in the second team, which obviously helps, and obviously led to getting offered a contract. I actually got 100 against Warwickshire's second team in a one-day game that Chris Wokes played in. So I think when I did that, Hout sort of stood up and noticed me a little bit more and gave me the opportunity to come back and play in 2020, which obviously was ruined a little bit by COVID, but still managed to get back in.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the century against Warwickshire with Wokesy playing. That's a feather in the cap, isn't it? And a story which you can tell, as we've just displayed here on the podcast. Yeah, it's always nice, isn't it, to score runs against test quality bowlers. It really is. And before we talk about 2020, I'm glad you actually brought up 2018, because I wanted to touch upon that in a little bit more detail, because you mentioned there you trialled for the entire season and you didn't get back in. Was there not a moment, was there never a hint of doubt that crept into your mind that maybe cricket wasn't for you? Or has that thought never entered the mind of Tom Wood?
Oh, no, absolutely. That thought's definitely crept into my mind. As I say, I pretty much trialled for two whole seasons. And I'd be lying if I said that thought didn't come into my mind. But again, it comes back to the, I have inner self-belief that I can. And the last thing I want to do is sit back and say, what if I tried? What if I tried a bit harder? What if I gave it another go? But yeah, them questions and the self-doubts always come in. I think anyone, you can speak to Joe Root or Ben Stokes or Steve Smith, they'll all have experienced self-doubt. And like you said, it's the moment you look back on them moments where you have done well and you have performed really well and against really good players, and you take that self-belief from there. But yeah, I think it's, I would be lying if I said I never had any self-doubts, because I think everyone does.
Absolutely. And in fact, there was the segment, wasn't there, on BT Sports coverage with Jeremy Snape, that was, former county cricketer for a number of counties. And it was brilliant. It was going all into the psychology of test cricket. And it is a constant theme. It is that self-doubt. It's a fear of failure at times as well. That really does creep into your head. And Tom, actually, before we talk about 2020, just a little bit about your position as a batter. Do you ever have those doubts in terms of fear of failure? Because in particular, up the top of the order, when you play there, for the majority of the time, you're going to fail a lot more times than you succeed. That's just how the nature of the beast works up the top. Do you ever have those questions, those doubts, when you're actually, you know, out in the middle, you've got the bat in hand, and maybe the performances haven't been quite there?
Not so much out in the middle. I think once you get out in the middle, all of that stuff goes away, because you're so almost laser focused. You've only got one thing. You're just concentrating on the ball. But leading into games, maybe waiting to bat, there's obviously always, you're going to be nervous. You're going to have a little bit of anxiety before it. But I think that's absolutely normal. And that's one thing I've learned over the course of my career so far, is that nerves for me is actually a good thing, because it takes me and my intensity to the next level. And I've said this for a long time, right? The day I don't get nervous before I go and bat is the day I should retire, because it means I'm not really that bothered. So yeah, nerves, one thing I try and do is try and break it down and deconstruct it and say, okay, why am I nervous? What am I nervous about? And again, like you said, it's that fear of failure. It's the fear of messing up, the fear of looking silly in front of your teammates, in front of the crowd, the fear of letting people down. But ultimately, how I get over that is how I prepare. And I know in my preparation, I've done everything I possibly can to make sure I'm prepared for it. So then I can just trust that and go into the game knowing I've given myself the best chance. And if I do fail, like you said, it happens more often than not. You can accept failing. I can accept failing, as long as I know I've done everything I can to give myself the best chance. If I've followed my process, I've stuck to my game plan, and it's just not come off on that day, hold your hands up, fair enough, that can happen. But yeah, as you say, as long as I follow my process and I prepare as best I can accept whatever outcomes come from that. For me, it's about, instead of trying to focus on, it's a cliche, but it's incredibly true, especially for cricket. It's not about focusing on the outcome. If I focus on my process and my preparation and absolutely nail that, more often than not, the outcome will handle itself.
100%, Tom. Very, very nicely put. And I'm really engrossed by this. Honestly, listeners, if you aren't engrossed by this, cricket is not the sport for you. This is absolutely fascinating. I love talking about the mental and psychological side of the game. And I love that passage there. In particular, obviously, preparation. Preparation is key. You always see that all the time when you see batters going out to the middle. You do your visualization, obviously, next sessions as well. Absolutely imperative. But it's funny, at the start of the podcast, you mentioned that one of your cricketing heroes was Kevin Peterson, because his quote with regards to nerves, nerves show that you care. And it's a very, very true quote. And if you look at AB de Villiers, in my opinion, one of the greatest batsmen of all time, in particular in my generation, absolutely clinical, would dispatch every single bowler on the planet for fun. I remember him in 2012 against Dale Steyn hitting for 24 runs. This is prime Dale Steyn bowling in, charging in at 90 mile an hour. And he just dispatched him. What a game it was. RCB versus Deccan Chargers, or Sunrisers, actually. It was 2013, a Sunrisers first ever season.
Yeah,
what an incredible moment that was. But you see him before he bats. He is an absolute bag of nerves. His palms are sweating, his knees shaking, it's going up and down. And then he goes out into the middle and he just enters this sea of calmness and tranquility. And he looks like the most comfortable person on the planet. So I really, really enjoyed that. And I'm glad to know that you're very similar in terms of your mindset as well, Tom. That is very, very interesting to hear. And I suppose, aside from the tough moments, because we have spoken a lot there, but I had to delve into that because your story is so, so intriguing and fascinating when it comes to the redemption arc back into the county circuit. We have to talk about the moment you got that contract in 2020, back at your boyhood club. What did that mean, considering all of the hardship that you'd gone through from 2017 up until that moment? What were the emotions like on that day?
Yeah, look, it was obviously like that contract was originally for the one day comp. So I'd spoken to Houts and he basically said, like, because we were due to lose four players to the 100, which ended up not happening. So he said, I want to sign you for the one day comp. You're going to play every game. Like, we know you can do it in the second team. You've done that for years now. This is your opportunity to play in the first team and show everyone what you can do, basically. And if you do well in the first team, then you get a full contract after that. And then, so that was obviously like incredibly pleasing to know that I was finally going to get the opportunity, which is what it's all about and is what I'd been starved of for a couple of years before that. But then COVID came along and seemed to disrupt everything, disrupt the whole world like it did. The 100 ended up not going ahead. The season was obviously massively shortened into a 2-month season, no one day competition. So I remember Houts rang me once all that sorted out. And he basically said, there's going to be no one day comp. It's up to you what you want to do. You can either postpone your contract and keep it for next year, where you're going to get the same opportunity to play every single game in the 50 over comp, or you can come for the whole of this season. Be around the squad, almost take your chances, really, because I can't promise you any sort of game time or the game time that I promised you previously, because we're not losing the players. And at the time, it was a bit of a no-brainer, really. There was no way I was just going to sit on the sidelines and wait another year for an opportunity. I thought, if I can get in, get around the squad, train well, and you never know what opportunities present themselves and come your way. That was always the path I was going to take. Ended up playing a couple of games that year, and then on the back of that got offered a 1-year contract for 2021.
I was about to say, yeah, it's 2022 now. I was about to say this year. It's
flying by. Forget what year we're in, the flying by.
Exactly. But I was about to say this year, and it's not this year anymore. We're 17 days into 2022. It's like you blink your eyes and it's just gone. It's going to be February soon. It's going to be the county season soon. But let's talk about 2021, Tom, because this was a prevalent theme when it came to our Twitter questions, which we'll get onto in due course. And I think you know exactly what's coming up. It's the knock, isn't it? East Midlands Derby. There's a massive smile on his face. Any Derbyshire fan out there listening, he is grinning like a Cheshire cat on my screen at the moment. We have to talk about this. This is honestly, this is going to be one of the big talking points from the podcast. That century against Nottinghamshire in the 2021 Royal Under One Day Cup. If you can, Tom, put it into words, how would you go about describing that remarkable individual performance?
It's a question I've been asked a lot, to be honest. And it's almost impossible. I don't feel like words can ever do justice to the emotions I felt from that. The biggest thing I can say is it's the most proudest moment of my career to date, hands down, without a doubt. I've got an incredible picture, courtesy of Dave Griffin, the photographer, of when I got the 100, and I, as you said there, just smiling like a Cheshire cat. Honestly, that innings that day was something that was incredibly special to me, not only to me but to my family as well. And it's something that I will cherish and remember forever. How I did it, I have no idea. It was just one of them magic days where you seem to be in the zone, as they say. Everything comes out in the middle. Every shot you try comes off. I remember it was a bit of a strange start to the day, actually, because we turned up to the ground and all the whispers around the ground was we weren't going to play, even though it was 25 degrees, sun was shining, because the covers had been blown off in the middle of the night, and the whole one side of the square was absolutely drenched, like it was just like mud, because the covers had blown off and there was some sort of storm in the night. So I remember the crowd were a little bit not happy, to say the least, and we were sat around waiting for a long time. Obviously, it was supposed to be a 50-over game. I think it got cut down to a 27-over game. We won the toss and batted first, and I remember walking out, we got off to a decent start, and I think there was about 20 overs left at the time, and I just thought, I'm just going to play it as if it's a 20-20 and be aggressive and bat myself, and yeah, thankfully it came off.
It came off. a possible understatement there, to say the least. Just to give some context to those who don't know this remarkable individual effort, it's the fastest List A century in Derbyshire's history. That's first and foremost. 109 from 59 balls. The century itself coming from 55 balls. It was a 27 overs per side game. Derbyshire won by 41 runs. And this is a great stat, if I may just say so myself. It's the first time that Derbyshire beat Nottinghamshire in a List A game since 2004. That was 17 years in the making, that moment. And talking of the moment itself, Tom, I know that you can't quite put it into words, but in terms of the immediate aftermath, obviously the win, that would have been tremendously important, but did you have some time after that game, maybe the day before, even a couple of days after, did you have a moment to really reflect on what you'd achieved, considering all that you've been through in your cricketing journey? Did it quite sink in immediately, or was that something which happened at a later time?
To be honest, I'm not really sure if it has sunk in yet. Like you said, the fastest List A 100 ever, second fastest in Derbyshire history, which is just, like, for me to think that is just almost unfathomable. When you think about, as we spoke about at the start of the pod, like, it's such a heritage and prestigious and such a big history of a cricketing county. Some of the best players in the world having played at the club. And for me to come through and get have the second fastest 100 ever is almost just surreal, and like it's hard to believe. So I'm not sure it has sunk in yet, but hopefully one day it will.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Maybe it'll be after you get the fastest ever one in 2022. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and find out in this year's One Day Cup, won't we? And I'm so, so happy there you mentioned, Tom, about Derbyshire, because I know, again, this is slightly off topic, but with the Ashes, right, as people will do, there has been a massive reaction, hasn't there? When it comes to county cricket, the quality of county cricket, everyone's got their opinion. And one of the worst things that you can do, and it's something that I fell into the trap of today, is going on the comment section on Twitter under a post, which is really critical about county cricket, because you get like 1,000 different opinions and people rarely find the middle ground on Twitter. That's the problem. It's not like real life where, you know, there's dialogue, there's conversation, isn't there? On Twitter, it's just vitriol at times and people just getting angry at one another. Just, you know, it's a mess at times. I like Twitter. It's a fantastic platform for connecting with people, but sometimes the opinions do get a little bit, let's just say a little bit too inflamed. I'll put it that way. A bit too aggressive, to put it quite kindly. But there has been a massive conversation, and there was a piece today by Jonathan Agnew, who is the BBC's cricket correspondent, and he was saying that in terms of the county championship, we should go from 18 first-class counties to 10. We should merge them, or some counties may not even play first-class cricket at all. As a Derbyshire boy who plays for the club, who has had the opportunity to experience life as a county cricketer for this illustrious club, and it is an illustrious club. People always say Derbyshire's a small club, this, that, the other. They've been a club in this country since 1870. It's 152 years of history that Derbyshire have existed in our county circuit. Tom, what would you have to say to the detractors, to the critics of Derbyshire? What does it mean to you to actually play for this great club?
I think it's a ludicrous idea, to be honest, for people to suggest that England have lost the Ashes due to county cricket and the standard of it, and that the answer is to get rid of numerous clubs. Like, it's just beyond belief for me. It means the world to me to play for Derbyshire, and I know it does for a lot of the lads as well. But it's not just the players who play at the club; it's the fans as well. Like, Derbyshire have got such a big loyal following of actual cricket people, and to take that club away from them simply because the England international team aren't performing as we all would hope is just ludicrous. To point the finger at county cricket is madness to me, because it's the same county cricket that got England to number one in the world. It's the same county cricket that England went to Australia and won the Ashes in 2010, 2011. It's the same county cricket that England went to India and won in, which is notoriously difficult. Like, obviously there's things that can improve with the structure and the setup, but to have a dramatic overhaul and almost abolish counties seems like a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction to me. And I hope it doesn't happen.
I would agree with that, obviously. I think people know my standpoint when it comes to 18 first-class counties. I'm all for them, and I will defend every single one of them. I know that I support a county which, let's be honest, probably wouldn't be affected with Warwickshire, because we have got Edgbaston, we are a test-playing county. But, you know, I just don't like the whole conversation of big versus small and, you know, test versus non-test. Every single one of these counties is massively, massively important. And we'll discuss that at length in, again, our Ashes post-mortem podcast. I've got some great stats with regards to that, which I'll save for now. But with regards to this whole conversation, I agree it's very reactionary. It's very much a knee-jerk reaction. People, you know, trying to get some attention, trying to get some clicks. And I can understand, obviously, we all want England to do as well as we can. You know, if you tear away all of our different opinions, our common ground as English cricket fans, English cricket stakeholders, supporters, players, coaches, we all want the best for English cricket. But to make the county circuit basically irrelevant, to get rid of these clubs which have existed for years, and as we said, you know, have produced countless England cricketers beforehand, have been a part, an integral part of producing teams which have gone to Australia and won, gone to the West Indies have won, gone to India and have won the World Cup in 2019. It's illogical, in my personal opinion. And again, you can say that's biased, obviously, as the host of the County Cricket Podcast, but that's just my view on this. I think it's absolutely crazy. I think it's crazy. When you think about it as well, we've got 59 million people in this country, and obviously not everyone plays cricket. There's only 300,000 registered players in this country. But to reduce it even further, that talent pool, yes, it will be concentrated. But at the same time, you're losing out on potentially a generation of cricketers who no longer have those local bases. So As I said, we'll get into this in more detail in an upcoming podcast. It's a tremendously complex topic. Everyone has an opinion on this. I've no doubt that there'll be people out there who agree and disagree with our views on this. But it is an important one. And it's one which, as I said, I'm very much in the camp of 18 first-class counties. Sport is cyclical. And for the time being, we need to look at improving the existing structure as opposed to revamping and remodelling it entirely. But aside from that, Tom, I think this is actually a good place actually to pick up our Twitter questions for tonight, because we had quite a few actually on our Twitter account. So thank you to each and every single one of you who did bring your questions in. And this first one is from Stephen Mann. And again, we talk about Derbyshire as a community club, a family club. Stephen always provides us with some fantastic questions. So big up to Stephen. And Stephen's question is, Tom, where do you see yourself as a batter in each format?
Yeah, Stephen's an absolute beauty and a huge supporter of the club. He also provides me with a lot of interesting tweets as well, which I'm very thankful for. So shout out to Stephen. But just to the question and where I see myself, I see myself as a top three batter in all three formats, to be honest. Whether that be opening, batting three, even four in Red Bull, like ideally. But something I've always said for a long time, I'll bat wherever the team needs me to bat. Whatever position helps the team best is where I will bat, and that's always been my stance on it.
I like that. Team first before the individual mindset. I like that. Very much playing for the group of players. I respect that. And the next one, this is from Paul. Again, Paul always gets some good questions in. So big up to all the Derbyshire fans who tune into the podcast, actually. They do get some very good questions in, I must admit. But this next one is from Paul Wright. And he says, Tom, what are your biggest strengths and weaknesses in life and cricket? That's quite a profound question from Paul.
Yeah, that is a very profound question. I think one of my strengths would be my work rate and my preparation. I think anyone who's seen me play cricket for any length of time, they will know I'm not a God-given talent. I've never been the best batter, the best bowler, the best fielder, never been the most athletic. I've never been the quickest. But what I do is I work incredibly hard. I fight and I battle. I don't back down from anything or anyone. I'm not scared of any situation or anyone. I respect everybody, but I'm not scared of anybody. Stand up to anyone and face the situation at hand. And I think that is something that's my talent, I'd say.
Fair enough. That reminds me of a quote. It's a beautiful quote from Mamadul Hassan Joy, young 21-year-old Bangladeshi opener. And he was asked about facing the likes of Trent Bolt, Tim Southee, Carl Jameson. And he says he doesn't play the names. He plays the ball in front of him. Fantastic quote. Great, great quote. Great young player as well. Thought I'd give him a shout out on the podcast. He is a very, very talented player.
That's something I learned early on in my career as well. I think looking back to 2017, I would definitely think, oh my God, this is Ben Stokes bowling at me or whoever, Stuart Broad. And you've seen these bowl on telly when I was a kid, blah, blah, blah. And it gets in your head. And if you're thinking that, you're not actually concentrating on the one thing, which is the most important thing. Whereas now I don't care who's bowling the ball at me. All I'm bothered about is the ball. It doesn't matter who's letting go of it. All I'm worried about is hitting the ball.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the mentality you have to have. Unlike me, if Jofra Archer was coming into bowl, yeah, I think I'd be taking evasive action, to say the least. Forget looking at the ball. I'm running. Or going for the Porsche, actually. There would be something inside of me. There'd be, you know, the 10% of craziness that would go for it, Aaron. Pull him into the stands for six. I wouldn't.
That's the other part of it, though. When you play against these guys you've seen on telly, big reputation, that's the part of it. You want to take them down. You want to be able to say, I've smacked Jofra Archer, Stuart Broad, whatever. Like, I think if you back down from that challenge and you don't want it, then you're going to have a very, very short career, because they're the exact type of situations where you need to stand up and you want to be, like for me personally, I want to be in them situations playing against the best players I possibly can.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing quite like it, is there? Obviously, I can't relate to that. I haven't faced any of these players yet. Who knows? Maybe one day if we have a net session against them. Probably wouldn't be for the best. My batting technique is absolutely terrible. I've been told I've got a batting technique like Chris Martin, and I'm not talking about the Coldplay singer. I'm talking about the New Zealand tail ender, who, funnily enough, used to play for Warwickshire, so that's probably where that comparison has come from. And talking of the likes of Stuart Broad, obviously Nottinghamshire plays at Trent Bridge. Jofra Archer of Sussex plays at Hove. That's a beautiful segment to go into Paul's next question, which is, Tom, what's your favourite away ground and why?
I think this is an incredibly easy question, and one that only really hit home a few months ago when I actually played there for the first time. And it's Lords, hands down. Like, I couldn't ever say anything else. Like, it's such a historic, prestigious ground. Just everything about it is just unbelievable. I remember walking out to warm up on the first morning, and just the grass is like, it's the best grass I've ever seen. It's like a billiards table. It's perfect. Like being on the balcony in the changing room, seeing all the history, the food is like a Michelin star restaurant. It's just everything about the place is just outstanding. I remember like walking out to bat and just looking up and looking around and thinking, wow, this is something special and something to savor for sure.
It certainly is. Again, I haven't played there, but I have been there for matches. And as soon as you go through the Grace Gates, you are just enveloped by this sense of history, again, tradition, pedigree. You think of all the greats who have gone through there, walked onto that pitch and produced remarkable performances. It's a very, very special ground. I'm biased, I'll say Edgbaston.
To be fair, if there was to be a second, it would be Edgbaston, purely based on the fact that I've only been there once. I've been there a couple of times to watch like England play. I went to an Ashes day there. But we played there in a T20 this year, and I'm sure you remember the one I was talking about. Yep.
And I know what you're going to bring up.
Would you? Unbelievable atmosphere. Like, unbelievable atmosphere. I remember we fielded first, and I was stood at cover. I shouted to one of the lads at point and he couldn't hear me. That's how loud it was. It was unbelievable. I think there was about 2,000-3,000 students in the Holly stand, all dressed up in fancy dress. I think they'd given away tickets for a quid or something. And yeah, let's just say they enjoyed themselves that night. But they made that an incredibly enjoyable night.
To think as well, that was only with 6,500 in. Edgbaston usually gets well over double that for T20 nights. It really is a remarkable atmosphere. I do remember that game, though, for two reasons. First of all, we lost for the first time against Derbyshire, I think in a decade, which not the
really?
Great. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
At Edgbaston.
Oh, right, okay.
Not in all formats, but yeah, I think that was the first time since 2010 or 2011 that we lost a home T20 to Derbyshire. So there was that, and then obviously And I get reminded of this all the time on Twitter. I wasn't one of the people who ran on the pitch. I don't know why everyone always aims this at me.
I'm sure I saw you running on. Yeah. I'm sure I saw you.
No, I was absolutely nowhere near that. To be fair, I say I was nowhere near. I was nowhere near the pitch, but I was in the Stanley Barnes stand. So for those who know Edgbaston, if you're in the Hollies and you're on the right-hand side, it's the one immediately to your right. So it's the smaller one by the scoreboard. And that night was absolute bedlam. I mean, they weren't there for the cricket. And
absolutely not.
And I think the greatest irony was that the name of the company was Invade. And they went and did a pitch invasion. And then they got permanently banned after that. I think they also did it in Durham. Terrible.
There was multiple pitch invasions as well. I remember during the game, I reckon there was 5 or 6 people run on. I remember I was batting. There was at least 2 or 3 run on while I was batting. And then I remember walking off after we won and looking across and just seeing all these people running on the pitch. It felt like back in the day where after every game, like the players used to have to run off, the fans would run on. It was unbelievable. I've never experienced anything like it.
No, I imagine that would have been unique. But let me just put this out there on behalf of Edgbaston and Warwickshire County Cricket Club. If you go to Edgbaston, enjoy yourself, behave responsibly. Please don't go on the pitch because it does make the club look bad. I mean, we got absolutely hammered after that in terms of the stewarding, in terms of the club itself. It was really, really bad after that night. And don't get me wrong, we'd lost as well. That was just compounding our misery even further. You mean, we've just lost our first home game of the season. The Lancs game was rained off. And then that pitch invasion from people who weren't even Warwickshire fans, and they cost the club money. Please, again, from the cricket connoisseur, enjoy yourself. Don't go on the pitch unless you're playing, of course, because that'll be absolutely imperative that you're in the middle if you're actually, you know, needing to bat or have a bowl. And talking of people who bowl, this is our last Twitter question for tonight. And this is from one of our OG guests on the podcast, Mr. Dusty Melts himself, Dustin Melton. Big up to Dustin. He is a lovely human being, to say the least. And his message, I just have to read this out in its entirety, Tom. Lovely human and an inspiration to many. Pretend I've got a South African accent, like Dustin. He's shown that although failure does happen, with perseverance and commitment, you can achieve what you set your mind to. So, Tom, we've already discussed about what drives you, but what gave you that mindset in the first place? Was there an origin story with regards to that? Was it from your dad? Was it from your family? Was it from someone in the world of cricket? Or was that just something inside you naturally that's come to the forefront over the years?
I'd probably say it's a collection of things, to be honest. As I spoke about earlier, I've been incredibly lucky to have two amazing parents who have always drilled in the importance of hard work and perseverance. And I think that influence can never be underestimated. Along with that, I'm a big podcast listener. I listen to a lot of podcasts of like elite performers in not only sport, but all kinds of walks of life. And almost just hearing how their mindset, how they go about things, how they perceive things. I've read a lot of books as well. And I think all of that cultivated together has probably created what you see here today in front of you. I'm a product of it all. I'm very, very thankful for it all.
And as you should be. And again, tonight it's been very profound, hasn't it? We're not usually this profound and philosophical on the podcast, but it's just been one of those episodes. And again, great question from Dustin. Really beautifully worded as well. And again, he's an absolutely cracking bloke. Give him a follow on social media. That's all I'll say. And fingers crossed that yourself and Dustin, Tom, can have good seasons for Derbyshire heading into 2022. And that brings me beautifully onto the concluding question of tonight's podcast, a bumper podcast, it has to be said. We're almost there. We haven't got the fixtures yet, but we are around 2 and a bit months to 3 months from the start of the county season resuming. And I cannot wait for that personally. As a county cricket fan, it has been far too long since I've been at Edgbaston. But heading into the 2022 season, Tom, what are your aspirations? What are your ambitions with Derbyshire from both an individual and a team perspective heading into this upcoming season?
Well, I think ambition at the club has never been higher. Obviously, Mickey Arthur's come in to take the reins, and I think it's not only been a lift to all of the players, but just everyone associated with the club to have someone of his stature and his experience and his pedigree to come in and take control. Just instantly provides a jolt of energy and ambition to everyone involved. And like Mickey's made it incredibly clear that like the vision for us and the ambition is to win things, to win tournaments, to win competitions, and to create the best possible players we can be and to create players who are going to go on to play for England. So the standard's been set very early on. In terms of the ambition and the vision and the goal for the club. So everyone's incredibly excited about that and striving and working as hard as we possibly can in training to try and achieve that. And just for me personally, it's similar to what it was last year. I just want to try to win as many games, contribute to winning as many games as possible for Derbyshire. In all three formats, playing all three formats, and contributing as much as possible to try and win as many games as we possibly can.
Well, Tom, it goes without saying, but myself and everyone here at the County Cricket Podcast are wishing both yourself and Derbyshire County Cricket Club all the very best heading into this upcoming season. honestly, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the fortunes of the club are much better than 2021. It was a tough season with regards to all the injuries, all the off-field stuff as well. Like, it was a very, very tough season for the club in terms of results-wise. But you know what? There's talent in Derbyshire. And again, if you just get some momentum, you get some rhythm coming into this season, who knows? Anything is possible. And that is the exact mentality that you have to have in any game, not just the wonderful sport of cricket. But Tom, that is pretty much it, to be honest, for today's podcast. It's been absolutely fascinating. And thanks again for taking the time to come on. I've absolutely loved every single minute of it. And you're always welcome back here on the podcast in the future. Just before we say our final goodbyes, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
Not really, no. I'm on Instagram. TomWood_11 is my Instagram. But apart from that, no, I'm not really that active on anything else. Follow the club, get around the club and support the club as much as possible. It's going to be an exciting season. And I hope to see as many people down at the club as possible.
Absolutely, Tom. Could not have said that any better. So for Derbyshire fans, get down to the Ancora. Get down to the Queen's Park Oval. If it's on the fixture list, we'll have to wait and see. It should be. Chesterfield's a good outground, so fingers crossed. Who knows? Maybe Warwickshire versus Derbyshire. I would not be against that whatsoever. Would be a nice journey to the East Midlands. But honestly, Tom, again, just thank you very much for taking the time. If any of you listeners out there want to go and follow Tom on Instagram, we'll leave the link to that in the podcast description, so please feel free to go and do that at your own discretion. But that is basically it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for tonight's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.